Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and the changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. It's been almost 2 weeks since George Floyd died after a white former Minneapolis police officer held a knee to his neck for several minutes. His last words were identical to those of Eric Garner's nearly 6 years earlier, "I can't breathe." Floyd's death was broadcast to the world through video captured at the scene, and it touched a nerve that sparked anger and protests not just in the U.S. but around the world. Look at the faces of the protesters. They're people of all colors and all ages who've had enough with the killings of unarmed Black Americans at the hands of law enforcement. Latinos in the U.S. have been especially outspoken in support of the Black Lives Matter movement in the latest protests. Some Latino protesters have said they're paying it forward because the Black community was so supportive after the El Paso Walmart massacre. Today on Fronteras, we're going to explore Black-Brown unity in the wake of George Floyd's death. Joining me on the show are the Reverend Regina Clark, an organizer with the National Poor People's Campaign and associate minister at Abyssinian Missionary Baptist Church in Memphis, Tennessee. We're also talking to Rodolfo Rosales Jr., the Texas State Director for the League of United Latin American Citizens. On August 3rd, 2019, 23 people were shot and killed at an El Paso Walmart. And it shocked everybody. El Paso's my hometown. And, you know, it still reverberates with me emotionally. But one thing that I thought was really amazing was I remember Reverend William Barber with the Poor People's Campaign showing up just a few days after the shooting. I was there covering for Texas Public Radio. And I just thought it was really amazing how the African-American community from all over the country was really stepping up to support the Latino community in this case, and especially in border communities like El Paso, and especially in El Paso, which is so set apart from the state. It has such a, you know, the only time you ever see it in the news is when there's bad news, immigration for the most part. And so to see this overwhelming amount of support, not just from our own community, but from outside the community, it really meant a lot. And I've noticed that in these protests, these George Floyd demonstrations, that there are so many Latino communities that have stepped up to support their African American brothers and sisters because, and a lot of them specify, because of the support that the Black community showed for Latinos in El Paso. And so, Reverend Clark, I'll go ahead and start with you. What does this sense of unity, do you think, means in the big picture? Do you think it's really going to help make a difference?
I do believe it is going to make a difference, because one thing about the African culture, the Black community, we know that it takes a village. You can't do all of it by yourself. By joining in with and supporting our Latinx brothers and sisters, our village is growing because we're fighting for some of the exact same things. And we know that as we come together as one, we're a stronger force together than we are divided.
And Rudy Rosales with LULAC, what do you have to add?
I'm in total agreement with the Reverend. I think that it's important to recognize that in reference to what's going on and the tragic shooting in El Paso, as well as the tragic death of Mr. Floyd, his name, George Floyd, let's make sure we get that out there. I think it's bittersweet in that it takes moments of tragedy for the two communities to really understand how much we need one another, how much we rely on one another, and how much in common we have with our Black, Brown, Asian, transgender. You know, these type of moments are important in that they're tragic, yes. My mom has a saying, or my grandmother's, "No hay mal que bien no venga." That means there's nothing bad, that something good doesn't come of it. And let's hope and pray that my grandmother was right, that out of this tragedy, something positive comes out of it and that we can grow. I have faith. I see the young people out there, and I must be honest. I hear people telling, oh, they don't wear their pants up this way and they listen to this music. And it sounds like, you know, a generation ago, they were saying that about us. So
exactly.
I'm just really excited with the prospect of moving forward.
Let's take a sort of a broad historical perspective of this, because sometimes in the older generations of Mexican Americans, of Mexicans, that, you know, there is this racism that they have had towards the African American community. You know, you talk to some older abuelas or older tías, and they're going to tell their kids that if you marry a black man or a black woman, you're going to be disowned from your family. And, you know, this kind of racism is probably not on the forefront of other people's minds who are not within our own communities, African American or Latino communities. They think it's black and white or brown and white. And so to me, that's why I wanted to have this conversation, because, you know, I remember growing up in high school or in junior high, the fight would always be between the Mexican American cholos and the black students. And I didn't think about this until years later. It's that sort of generational racism that we have within our own communities. And the fact that we're seeing these younger generations with more open minds, where they don't see color as a divider, they see it as a uniter. What can you comment about sort of that generational racism that is changing now with these younger people, Reverend?
As you were speaking, what I was thinking was, it was almost that crab mentality, the fight not to be on the bottom. Because when you talk about the gangs and the fights that went on, I always wonder, was it really between us, or did someone else put that in us? Just like in church, we talk about the white theology, the theology that diminishes every other nationality and puts white at the top and does not put us as equal. I see the same thing. And it's like, I wonder how much of that generationally we were told that, you know, we had to be better than, because maybe we knew when people came over from Mexico. You know, when you think about people coming over from Africa, that was so long ago, most of us didn't live during those times. And that's, we read that in the history books. But we still see these people coming in across the borders from Mexico and from our southern countries. And then we start to wonder, well, they're new. So they're the new ones. So we want to be better than them. And we can't have that mentality, because that's someone else dividing us and telling us that we can't all be one. And that's not to our advantage. That's to the advantage of the oppressors.
To ignore the internal conflict within either community would be detrimental. We have to face the ugliness within our own cultures, within our own families, within our own structure, right? You know, I think that within the Latino community, the problem is that because we are so diverse in the colors and shades that we come in, and we forget that we are also, from my understanding of history, that's the key thing, right? History, do we understand history and know our history? History, right? So the bottom line is this, is there are or were a million Africans who were brought to Mexico and then were freed. So there are black brothers and sisters within our culture as well, in Colombia and Venezuela and Mexico, especially in the eastern seaboard or coast or Gulf of Mexico. So within that, if you do take the dynamic, I don't want to get too deep, but within our own culture, we have our own biases and racisms. I know there was a saying, que bonita, que güerita, meaning how beautiful, how light-skinned. And the other one was, ay, pobrecito, que petito, or you poor thing, you're so dark, right? So these are cultural issues that we have and dynamics that we have to deal with within our own culture. You know, I think that if we don't address the issues of bigotry and racism within, then we don't move forward. But it's there.
You know, you were talking about the need to know our history. And that's critical right now. Because so many in the African-American community don't really know our history. But if you look at it, who wrote the history books that our children are reading from? And would someone write a history book and teach our children how to stand up against those that don't want them to succeed, those that want them to continue to have to depend on others in order just to live? So we have to learn our history. And by learning, like the story that you shared about the slavery and the Afro-Mexican, a lot of our young people don't know those stories.
And it's going to take a long time for these stories to be heard, because, you know, here in Texas, after a very long fight, Mexican-American studies is now being offered in school. And just this year, African-American studies programs were also finally approved for public schools here. And so, again, these stories are just barely starting to erupt, but we need to have people who are there to tell those stories, people who know those stories, in order to teach other people. And when I was in El Paso after the shootings, I had a chance to speak with Yolanda Leyva. She's an El Paso historian at the University of Texas at El Paso there. And sort of to paraphrase what she said, the only way we can really move forward and address racism head on is to openly admit that this nation was founded on white supremacy. Once we can admit that, then we can take those first steps to try to heal ourselves. Reverend Regina Clark, do you have any comments?
Yes, we have to stop with the denial. We've been denying that this country was built on white supremacy. This country was built on the backs of Black and brown people. And so we do have to come together and understand that the history that has been shared, maybe verbally in a larger scale, is not accurate. And we have to look at things in the right context. So it's necessary that our groups unite and come together so that we can hear the stories from those who are Hispanic, the ancestors there who can tell us firsthand those stories, just like we hear the stories from our ancestors, from our Dr. Barbers and from our James Cones and from our, you know, James Forbes, all of those people in our history, our Martin Luther King, our Katie Geneva Cannon, all of those who tell us the stories. We've got to start listening to the stories from the ancestors to tell it from what their point of view and what they saw, so that we can get the story right and teach our young people where we came from and why there does not need to be division. There's more that unites us than should ever divide us.
In reference to who wrote the history books, to the victor goes the spoils. The irony in that quote, you know, is that this is where we have the systemic racism and we have these issues continuing, because we do distort, and not necessarily us or necessarily white people in general, but the system itself lends itself to that. You look at the Battle of the Alamo. I love the contradiction, and that the victors were actually the Mexican army. Who wrote the history? What are we learning? Mm-hmm. So we learn about these tragic heroes at the Alamo, when in reality, they were fighting for slavery. The Mexican government had told the new arriving Texicans, I guess they called themselves the Anglos, they told them, look, just learn the culture, learn the language, but you can't have slaves. And they said, no, we want slaves. So I think that's a dynamic we need to bring forward.
And just like you were mentioning the real purpose, you know, it was about maintaining slavery. If we bring that to 2020, a lot of the decisions that are being made, what's their real purpose? Their real purpose is to maintain what someone has determined is the status quo, to maintain a type of slavery. Sending people back out to work who already don't make $15 an hour and putting their lives on the line in order to make sure that someone makes money, that's continuing to maintain slavery.
We're talking with the Reverend Regina Clark, an organizer with the National Poor People's Campaign and associate minister at Abyssinian Missionary Baptist Church in Memphis, Tennessee. We're also talking to Rodolfo Rosales Jr., the Texas State Director for the League of United Latin American Citizens. When we come back, more on a conversation on Black-Brown unity.
Well, right now it's time to stand in solidarity with our Black brothers and sisters and to let them know that we're there for them.
That's next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez. George Floyd's death has the nation reeling. Floyd's name joins a long list of names of unarmed Black men and women killed at the hands of law enforcement. Eric Garner, Tatiana Jefferson, Breonna Taylor, Tamir Rice, Philando Castile. It's a list that's painfully long. Protesters want George Floyd's name to be the last. Joining me on Fronteras today are Reverend Regina Clark, an organizer with the National Poor People's Campaign and associate minister at Abyssinian Missionary Baptist Church in Memphis, Tennessee. We're also speaking with Rodolfo Rosales Jr., the Texas State Director for the League of United Latin American Citizens. We're talking about Black-Brown unity and the calls for justice and about a path towards healing. It's been almost a couple of weeks. By the time this program airs, it'll be almost a couple of weeks since George Floyd was killed. It's been almost a year since El Paso, 30 years since Rodney King, 50 years since the assassination of Martin Luther King. And again, Reverend and Rudy, you were talking about hidden history. When I was sort of looking back on these movements, I came across the Tulsa Massacre. It's been almost a century. And that is something I had never heard of until yesterday, when I was preparing for this interview. At least 300 people were killed in what they call a race riot. But in fact, it wasn't. It was pretty much just flat out murder. So we're seeing these happen throughout history. We're seeing a George Floyd in almost every city in America. What words of hope do you have for people? Because I mean, we look at these events that have happened just in recent history, and it almost seems like nothing has changed. And I know a lot of people listening might feel hopeless and helpless, and the only thing they can do is go out and protest. And what do you think, Reverend Clark, we'll start with you again. What words do you have to offer people who might have this feeling of helplessness right now?
It's very interesting on the timing, because here in Memphis, we have been protesting for 7 straight nights. And I have listened to the apathy of a lot of young people who want to know why we're doing it. And then I've even heard some people in their maybe 30s and 40s who are just like, it's a waste of time for you all to stand up and for you all to be out here protesting. It's a waste of time for you to do that. It's not, because what's going to happen is if we don't do anything, nothing is going to change. And so what we have to do is we have to look at how we are organizing, how we're standing up, how are we holding our elected officials accountable? One thing that I constantly try to remind people is we pay the salaries of the politicians, the chief of police, the sheriffs, all of those. We pay their salaries. But what we haven't done is we haven't used the power that comes with that. So we have to stand together and know that if we come together, we can vote those people out. We can vote people out who are not making decisions that are to our best interest, because they're supposed to represent us. So the hope that I would share with anyone is that if you don't want anything to change, sit down and sit on your hands. But if you want something to change, continue to stand up, continue to raise your hands, continue to walk, continue to come together. We must rise together so that we can make a change to what has been going on for years. And I also don't want us to disrespect the legacy of all of our ancestors who have lost their lives, who have been fighting this fight for years. We know things are different than they were 50, 60 years ago, but we know there's some things that are still the same. So that means we still have work to do. So we're not finished. We have work to do, and we have resources that we didn't have, because years ago, we didn't have the education. We didn't have the laws that would allow us to be able to have a seat at the table. We now have to take our seat at the table, and we have to speak up with the voice of the people.
I think that in this time in history, and particularly with George Floyd, I think that as Latinos, Latinx, as Hispanics, we need to all step forward in looking at where we are in terms of our relations with our Black brothers and sisters. I really, truly believe that right now is a time in history where it's important that we step back and understand, is there a difference between walking down the street and being Black versus Hispanic? And I'm not taking away from anything from our own prejudices within our own community, and also the prejudice outside seeing us as foreigners. In my particular instance, I'm 7-8 generations Tejano. Before, my dad likes to say, we didn't cross the border crossed us. You know, these are historical facts that need to get out there. Now, all things being equal, though, I really think in this moment that as Latinos, we need to step forward in reference to understanding what it is to be Black in the United States of America, and to understand and try to empathize with why, you know, a father has to tell his son, you have to be careful, son, because it's not just you out there. It's the fact that your skin tone, your color is going to bring upon ignorance and stupidity. And I think George Floyd, the situation that occurred, while tragic, like I said, I think that's important that people realize this man did nothing violent. He was cooperative. We saw a man executed on national television. It's unexcusable. And I think that while the relationship between the Black and brown community needs to be fostered and growing, I think at this time and in this juncture, but right now it's time to stand in solidarity with our Black brothers and sisters and to let them know that we're there for them. Sometimes you got to sit back. You know, it's sort of like going to the funeral. You know, you go to the familia and you're there. Sometimes you have to step back, take back your pride, and just sit there and be there for the ones that are grieving. And right now it's our time to help and to understand and to empathize and to be part of that in reference to Black Lives Matter. I really, really, really think as Latinos, as a group, we need to step back, take a look at how we treat our Black brothers and sisters, as well as how do we and try to empathize and understand what's going on in reference to being Black in America. And I think at this time and at this juncture, Black Lives Matter.
We've been speaking with Rodolfo Rosales Jr., the Texas State Director for LULAC, and with the Reverend Regina Clark, an organizer with the National Poor People's Campaign and associate minister at Abyssinian Missionary Baptist Church in Memphis, Tennessee. We leave you with a song of hope, recorded by Puerto Rican singer and activist Taina Asili y La Banda Rebelde, recorded for the Poor People's Campaign. Everybody's got a right to live. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show online at tpr.org and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Ben Henry is our podcast producer. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Everybody's